The Dialogue of St. Catherine of Siena, Part 13. How this devoted soul, looking into the divine mirror, saw the creatures going in diverse ways. Then that soul, tormented with intense desire, gazing into the sweet divine mirror, saw creatures setting out to attain their end in diverse ways and with diverse considerations. She saw that many began to mount, feeling themselves pricked by servile fear, that is, fearing their own personal pain, and she saw others, practicing this first state, arriving at the second state. But few she saw who arrived at the greatest perfection. How servile fear is not sufficient without the love of virtue to give eternal life, and how the law of fear and that of love are united. Then the goodness of God, wishing to satisfy the desire of that soul, said, "Do you see those? They have arisen with servile fear from the vomit of mortal sin. But if they do not arise with love of virtue, servile fear alone is not sufficient to give eternal life. But love, with holy fear, is sufficient, because the law is founded in love and holy fear. The old law was the law of fear that was given by me to Moses, by which law they who committed sin suffered the penalty of it. The new law is the law of love, given by the word of my only begotten Son, and founded in love alone. The new law does not break the old law, but rather fulfills it, as said my truth, 'I come not to destroy the law, but to fulfill it.' And he united the law of fear with that of love. Through love was taken away the imperfection of the fear of the penalty, and the perfection of holy fear remained, that is, the fear of offending, not on account of one's own damnation, but of offending me, who am supreme good. So that the imperfect law was made perfect with the law of love. Wherefore, after the car of the fire of my only begotten Son came and brought the fire of my charity into your humanity with abundance of mercy, the penalty of the sins committed by humanity was taken away. That is, he who offended was no longer punished suddenly, as was of old given and ordained in the law of Moses. There is, therefore, no need for servile fear, and this does not mean that sin is not punished, but that the punishment is reserved, unless, that is to say, the person punish himself in this life with perfect contrition. For in the other life, the soul is separated from the body. Wherefore, while man lives, is his time for mercy, but when he is dead, comes the time of justice. He ought, then, to arise from servile fear and arrive at love and holy fear of me. Otherwise, there is no remedy against his falling back again into the river and reaching the waters of tribulation and seeking the thorns of consolation, for all consolations are thorns that pierce the soul who loves them disordinately. How? By exercising oneself in servile fear, which is the state of imperfection, by which is meant the first step of the holy bridge, one arrives at the second step, which is the state of perfection. I told you that no one could go by the bridge or come out of the river without climbing the three steps, which is the truth. There are some who climb imperfectly, and some perfectly, and some climb with the greatest perfection. The first are those who are moved by servile fear, and have climbed so far being imperfectly gathered together, that is to say, the soul, having seen the punishment which follows her sin, climbs, and gathers together her memory to recollect her vice, her intellect to see the punishment which she expects to receive for her fault, and her will to move her to hate that fault. And let us consider this to be the first step, and the first gathering together of the powers of the soul, which should be exercised by the light of the intellect, with the pupil of the eye of holy faith, which looks not only at the punishment of sin, but at the fruit of virtue, and the love which I bear to the soul, so that she may climb with love and affection, and stripped of servile fear. And doing so, such souls will become faithful and not unfaithful servants, serving me through love and not through fear. And if, with hatred of sin, they employ their minds to dig out the root of their self-love with prudence, constancy, and perseverance, they will succeed in doing so. But there are many who begin their course climbing so slowly, and render their debt to me by such small degrees, and with such negligence and ignorance, that they suddenly faint, and every little breeze catches their sails, and turns their prows backward. Therefore, because they imperfectly climb the first step of the bridge of Christ crucified, they do not arrive at the second step of his heart. Of the imperfection of those who love God for their own profit, delight, and consolation. Some there are who have become faithful servants, serving me with fidelity, without servile fear of punishment, but rather with love. This very love, however, if they serve me with a view to their own profit, or the delight and pleasure which they find in me, is imperfect. Do you know what proves the imperfection of this love? The withdrawal of the consolations which they found in me, and the insufficiency and short duration of their love for their neighbor, which grows weak by degrees, and oftentimes disappears. Towards me their love grows weak when, on occasion, in order to exercise them in virtue and raise them above their imperfection, I withdraw from their minds my consolation, and allow them to fall into battles and perplexities. This I do so that, coming to perfect self-knowledge, they may know that of themselves they are nothing, and have no grace, and accordingly, in time of battle, fly to me, as their benefactor, seeking me alone, with true humility. For which purpose I treat them thus, without drawing from them consolation, indeed, but not grace. At such a time, these weak ones, of whom I speak, relax their energy, impatiently turning backwards, and sometimes abandon, under color of virtue, many of their exercises, saying to themselves, "This labor does not profit me." All this they do because they feel themselves deprived of mental consolation. Such a soul acts imperfectly, for she has not yet unwound the bandage of spiritual self-love. For had she unwound it, she would see that in truth everything proceeds from me, that no leaf of a tree falls to the ground without my providence, and that what I give and promise to my creatures, I give and promise to them for their sanctification, which is the good and the end for which I created them. My creatures should see and know that I wish nothing but their good, through the blood of my only begotten Son, in which they are washed from their iniquities. By this blood they are enabled to know my truth, how, in order to give them eternal life, I created them in my image and likeness, and recreated them to grace with the blood of my Son, making them sons of adoption. But since they are imperfect, they make use of me only for their own profit, relaxing their love for their neighbor. Thus, those in the first state come to naught, through the fear of enduring pain, and those in the second, because they slacken their pace, ceasing to render service to their neighbor, and withdrawing their charity, if they see their own profit or consolation withdrawn from them. This happens because their love was originally impure, for they gave to their neighbor the same imperfect love which they gave to me. That is to say, a love based only on desire of their own advantage. If, through a desire for perfection, they do not recognize this imperfection of theirs, it is impossible that they should not turn back. For those who desire eternal life, a pure love, prescinding from themselves, is necessary. For it is not enough for eternal life to fly sin from fear of punishment, or to embrace virtue from the motive of one's own advantage. Sin should be abandoned because it is displeasing to me, and virtue should be loved for my sake. It is true that, generally speaking, every person is first called in this way, but this is because the soul herself is at first imperfect, from which imperfection she must advance to perfection, either while she lives, by a generous love to me, with a pure and virtuous heart that takes no thought for herself, or, at least, in the moment of death, recognizing her own imperfection, with the purpose, had she but time, of serving me, irrespectively of herself. It was with this imperfect love that Saint Peter loved the sweet and good Jesus, my only begotten Son, enjoying most pleasantly his sweet conversation. But when the time of trouble came, he failed, and so disgraceful was his fall, that not only could he not bear any pain himself, but his terror of the very approach of pain caused him to fall, and deny the Lord, with the words, "I have never known him." The soul who has climbed this step with servile fear and mercenary love alone falls into many troubles. Such souls should arise and become sons and serve me irrespective of themselves. For I, who am the rewarder of every labor, render to each man according to his state and his labor. Wherefore, if these souls do not abandon the exercise of holy prayer and their other good works, but go on with perseverance to increase their virtues, they will arrive at the state of filial love, because I respond to them with that same love with which they love me, so that if they love me as a servant does his master, I pay them their wages according to their deserts. But I do not reveal myself to them, because secrets are revealed to a friend, who has become one thing with his friend, and not to a servant. Yet, it is true that a servant may so advance by the virtuous love which he bears to his master, as to become a very dear friend. And so do some of these of whom I have spoken. But while they remain in the state of mercenary love, I do not manifest myself to them. If they, through displeasure at their imperfection and love of virtue, dig up with hatred the root of spiritual self-love, and mount to the throne of conscience, reasoning with themselves so as to quell the motions of servile fear in their heart, and to correct mercenary love by the light of their holy faith, they will be so pleasing to me that they will attain to the love of the friend. And I will manifest myself to them, as my truth said in these words, "He who loves me shall be one thing with me, and I with him, and I will manifest myself to him, and we will dwell together." This is the state of two dear friends, for though they are two in body, yet they are one in soul through the affection of love, because love transforms the lover into the object loved, and where two friends have one soul, there can be no secret between them. Wherefore, my truth said, "I will come, and we will dwell together." And this is the truth.